Good. Great to see you guys tonight. Wow, that's hard to read. Well, you don't have to look at that long. Let's go to Joshua chapter 1. Really great to be with you. Thank you so much for the invitation to be here. I appreciate that. It's been fun to coordinate with Jordan and appreciate very much the elders making this opportunity available. So as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. We know this incredible statement, this awesome declaration that Joshua makes in chapter 24, but I want us to start and get some background for why we would be even looking at the life of Joshua in the first place. And I want us to dig in, not just to say, why would we listen to Joshua or care about this guy that lived so many thousands of years ago, but I also want to say, when we just make a declaration, for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord, well, what does that mean? Right? Because just the phrase that we're going to serve the Lord can actually mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So I want you to start in Joshua chapter 1. Please talk to the person beside you. This is very much going to be a discussion, a Bible class. And I want you to think for a minute, what does Joshua have in mind when he says, for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord? Like, what does that look like for him? What does that actually involve? So y'all take a minute, look through Joshua chapter 1, verse 1 through 9. See what we're going to come up with together for what this actually involves when he says, this is what we're going to do. I don't think he means we're just going to go fishing every Sabbath day, right? Like, he's got something in mind there. Okay, Robert?
God told him several times in chapter 1, I will be with you wherever you go. And that was a promise the Lord made to him. And Joshua, I would assume, felt the obligation to return the favor.
Okay, don't you love it when there's a preacher in the audience and he's like totally on the same wavelength? He's trusting him, isn't he? That he actually believes this awesome promise here at the beginning of chapter 1, that every single place that your foot lands on the ground, that's going to be yours. I'm going to keep my promises, and you can count on this. I'm going to be with you everywhere you go, no matter how big the city is, no matter how small the city is, no matter what, you can count on me. And that was a big part of what it meant for Joshua. What else comes to your mind? Yes. Right. So that's like the absolute essential answer when you're looking at chapter 1, right? That there has to be a courage component. When Joshua says, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, and he makes that public declaration in chapter 24, he has to be thinking back to the request that God had made of him so many years earlier. This is not just a walk in the park. This is something that requires courage. So let's dive on that a little deeper for us today at the moment. When we're talking about our families serving the Lord and the need for courage, where are we in need of courage today? What are the things that test or try our courage right here in Murfreesboro in our generation? Yes. Some level of differentiation, some level of distinction to let your light shine, to stand out, even at a time when it feels really comfortable to just fly under the radar. It takes courage to be noticed for taking a stand of some type. What else? What else does it look like? Yes, sir. Very good. So sometimes the things we see on the news, they get us down, right? Bad news sells papers. Bad news gets clicked on. But we can't, like, we're not of this world. Our citizenship is different. We can't let that get us down and stop us from carrying out the good works God has given us. What else requires courage? Where do we need courage today in serving the Lord?
It's courage to tell people what they need to hear, not necessarily what they want to hear.
Great. to come back and to acknowledge God's authority. Like, God's going to give Joshua a lot of marching orders, and the people didn't always want to hear that, especially when he gets to the chapter where everybody's going to get circumcised. They didn't all want to hear that, but it's like, hey, you need to know what you need to know. What does God say about this subject? And it takes courage to speak up about those things. All right, anything else in chapter 1? I've got one more if you want to just like guess what Philip is thinking. But anything else in Joshua chapter 1 that you're like, when he says, we're going to serve the Lord, what does that look like? What does that include?
He also says, the book
of the law will not depart from you. Yes. Let's read those verses for a second. Verse 7. Be strong and courageous. Be careful to do according to the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or the left, that you may have success. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth. You shall meditate on it day and night, that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous. Then you will have success. For Joshua, declaring that me and my house are going to serve the Lord meant obedience. It was more than an attitude. It was more than a state of heart. I mean, trust is important. Courage is important. But there were concrete actions prescribed by God's law that he said, I'm going to put myself, I'm going to obey those commandments. And like, so we kind of know this, but it's important to unpack it for a minute, not to take this for granted, because when some people say, I'm going to serve the Lord, they don't have in mind the kind of obedience that Joshua does. And Joshua is being very careful, as verse 8 says, not to depart from the right or the left, but to truly follow all that God has revealed. So then let's walk a mile in his shoes for a moment. Let's just walk a mile in his shoes for a moment. Let's talk about Joshua at his best. Come over to chapter 6 with me. Can I get a volunteer that would read verse 1 through 3, and then another volunteer, please, to read verse 16 through 21. Thanks, John Mark's got 1 through 3. Who's got 16? 21. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, John Mark.
Now Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city, you, all your men of war, you shall go around this city once.
Very good. And just skip down to verse 16.
At the seventh time, when the priests blew the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. The city shall be under the ban. It and all that is in it belongs to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot and all who are with her in the house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. But as for you, only keep yourselves from the things under the ban, so that you do not covet them, and take some of the things under the ban, and make the camp of Israel accursed and bring trouble on them. But all the silver and gold and articles of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord. So the people shouted, and the priests blew the trumpets. When the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted with a great shout, and the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up to the city, every man straight ahead, and they took the city. They utterly destroyed everything in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep and donkey, with the edge of the sword.
Very good. So this just is like a quick refresher. If it's been a while since you volunteered to teach the first graders and you haven't covered Jericho in a little while, what are we trying to imitate about Joshua? This is him at his best. It's one of the greatest victories in the whole book, right? What are we trying to imitate about Joshua when we think of him at his best? Okay, this is really different from King Saul, right? The King Saul, oh, we got to keep these things and they're going to be so awesome. But no, Joshua is doing exactly as God prescribed, both in marching around and in not taking the things that God had said to reserve for the Lord. What else do we want to imitate about Joshua when he's at his best? Yeah, sorry.
He didn't consider it foolishness. It matter that it made sense to him, or he understood the physics of how the walls were going to fall or not. This is what God said, and this is what we're going to do.
Very good. So rather than get distracted with his own thoughts, we've got the Ark of the Covenant. Let's do this. Yes.
He did not let his leadership go to his head. Totally humbled himself before God and his instruction.
I was hoping somebody would bring out leadership when we were in this chapter. Man, I'm going to keep you in bring you all my classes. There's a leadership, right? Nobody thinks of Joshua and say, oh, he's a pushover. Joshua is a tremendous leader, but he's a leader that is under the Lord. He's a leader with humility that knows he's not knocking these walls over. Yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say that he gives the Lord credit. He did not take it upon himself, but he says, for the Lord has given you the city.
There you go. To continually point back to what God is doing. God is keeping these promises. God is being faithful to care for and provide for this generation as they come in to invade and to conquer. Anything else that jumps out here? Yes, sir.
Not in this passage, but in verse 11 there. We don't see in the command that he's commanded to do this early, but he arises early to do this. So we almost see an eagerness to carry out that command, to see that it's done. And we're not going to delay and put this off. We're going to respond right off the bat.
That's great. When Joshua is at his best, he's not wasting any time. He's mobilizing these people. He's moving them forward, and he's instructing them. You know, imagine all the times that the teachers tonight are going to try to quiet their classrooms back down. Josh is going to keep them quiet as they march around. And then, coordinated, all together, everyone is going to shout, right? Like, he's communicating those instructions. There's just so much to admire about Joshua when we think of him at his best. So then let's skip forward to chapter 9. And let's remember, he's not perfect. He's a wonderful leader, but he makes his share of mistakes as well. Let's look at Joshua at his worst. If someone would read chapter 9, verse 12 through 16. Joshua chapter 9, 12 through 16. Okay, thanks, Lisa. Can you imagine the pit in his stomach at the end of those 3 days? Oh no, what have I done? Right? It's the ultimate buyer's remorse. Because they didn't just like hang out with these people or have a picnic with these people. They cut a covenant with these people. They've made an oath, determination to extend peace. But it's all been a mistake. It's all been in the wrong direction. What are some of the mistakes that we see in this chapter that we want to learn from so that our house can serve the Lord without stumbling over some of these same errors?
There was a lot of known wisdom.
Okay. There's a lot of assumptions happening in this chapter, aren't there? They just kind of look at the situation and they, oh yeah, exactly how to size this up. One of the great things that our elders have told us before is that they'll sit down with a couple and they'll have a pretty good idea of like where this conversation is going to go, and they have to remind themselves, no, listen. Because I don't need to assume the dynamic. And as the more they listen, the more they see, okay, I've got to walk through this situation a little differently.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't make big decisions without talking to God.
Isn't that the big one in this text, right? That it specifically says, verse 14, and did not ask for the counsel of the Lord. And how many times can we just size up the situation and say, yep, I've been here, I've done this before, and I know just what to do. But we don't stop and pray about it the way we should. Yes, ma'am?
So one of the things I've heard recently is that your mind needs to be stronger than your emotions. And so like, what decision have you made from emotions that has turned out to be good? It's always like, well, I don't have this. I mean, do something drastic. Mind was at play, you'd make the right decision, consult with
Very good. So not just making a purely emotional decision, but making sure it's an informed decision, making sure it's based on the will of the Lord rather than just how we feel or perceive. Because, I mean, they fought some tough battles up to this. It'd be nice to just make peace now, make this one a little bit smoother. But it was the wrong decision, right? Anything else that jumps out to you guys? Some mistakes to avoid from the life of Joshua in this chapter or in other places that you might remember. All right, I'll take it. So, chapter 1, we've got Joshua's character. He's a man of trust or faith. He's a man of courage. He's a man of obedience. When he's at his best, he's the top, right? He has a whole book for a reason. And he leads them into great victory. But when he's at his worst, he's just like me and you. He makes assumptions. He doesn't pray to the Lord. He lets his emotions get the best of him. He lets the leaders under him, like, he assumes that they're fact-checking everything, but he doesn't fact-check. Like, we just all can stumble and make those kind of mistakes. So now let's get to our key chapter. Let's come to chapter 24, and let's think about what it takes for him to make this declaration. Because when you come to chapter 24, and he tells the whole assembly, "As for me and my house, we are going to serve the Lord." Don't you understand that the assembly thinks, you know what? That's right. His family is going to do that. We've known this man. We've watched his family. We've watched his household for all of these years. And when he says this, it's not just empty words. All the way back to chapter 1. You've got the proof of his life and character that yes, Joshua leads a house that serves the Lord. So I want to share four things on this point and directly from this chapter, and then we'll get back into a little bit more discussion, and then we'll kind of come back to some other points. But in chapter 24, would you just read verse 1 and 2 with me to think through this for a moment? Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and called for the elders of Israel and for their heads and their judges and their officers. And they presented themselves before God. Joshua said to all the people, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, from ancient times your fathers lived beyond the river, namely Terah, the father of Abraham and the father of Nahor, and they served other gods." I think if we want to take some lessons from the life of Joshua on how we can have a house that serves the Lord, we start right here with the Lord's introduction. God wanted Joshua to begin his speech this way. From ancient times, they served other gods. These people, before they are ever challenged with the decision, are reminded of the pull that idols possess. And I think we need that reminder. That it's easy to make this the theme, and it's easy to get excited about his bottom line decision, but we need to seriously consider that this is an uphill battle in a lot of ways. That the pull of our culture, that the pull of society, that the pull of these idols in our life is very real, so much so that we've seen our own family stumble. Someone like Abraham, someone like Terah, right? That they had a time in their life when other gods had come into their heart and they were being worshipped. And I just need to know that I'm no different and I'm no better. And I can stumble into those same practices. It's a sobering introduction because they don't like to think about that part of their history, right? They don't like to think about what used to be. But it's sobering and it's important because the pull and the temptation to follow after the idols of our culture and the idols of our day is just as real now as it was then. So come to the end of the chapter. Verse 12. I love this one. Couldn't leave it out. "I sent the hornet before you, and it drove out the two kings of the Amorites from before you, but not by your sword or your bow. And I gave you a land on which you had not labored, cities which you had not built, and you have lived in them. You are eating of vineyards and olive groves which you did not plant." And God is saying, like, the victory here was not by your might, and the luxuries and the pleasures that you enjoy are not from your labors. Verse 14, Now, therefore, fear the Lord, serve Him in sincerity and truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. If it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, then choose for yourselves today. Pause there. Not choose for yourself next week. Not choose for yourself next year when it comes around and it's New Year's. You're going to set some resolutions. Choose for yourself today. I think one of the things we love about this is that Joshua is the kind of leader that presents this clear and pressing choice before the people. There's really only two options here. And just like the kids were singing about building on the sand or building on the rock, there are still only two options. And if I'm not looking at this as a pressing choice that affects me today, I haven't really understood what Joshua was asking. So then I turn back and I look in the mirror. And I think each of us, we can look in the mirror and say, am I communicating that within my family? That today is a day to get our Bible lesson for Sunday morning. Today is the day to choose where I'm going to be and where I'm going to attend. Today is the day that my kids are looking at me and imitating me. So I need to watch my speech and I need to guard my heart and I need to choose what we're putting on Netflix really carefully. Like, today is the day to make this choice. Joshua makes such a compelling statement because he shows that it requires immediate action. And this is going to be kind of a theme all the way through the book. We'll circle back around to this a little bit in chapter 1. But as we've already pointed out, he rose early and then began marching around Jericho. He's not a procrastinator, and he doesn't want them to be either. But there's a third thing here. He reminds them of idolatry. He shows them how clear and immediate the choice is. He is a decisive leader with faith and courage. So that could kind of be 2 points. Let's just start with the first half of it, that he actually is a decisive leader. He's not going to waffle around on this, and he's not going to forever debate the pros and cons of the gods of Egypt. We just went through a class that we called Modern Challenges down in Atlanta, and Marty Broadwell made this fantastic point that our culture today encourages our 20-somethings to investigate all world religions and then choose one. That is absolutely not the biblical pattern. God actually doesn't leave it up to us to investigate all the idols of the world and then choose Him. God is a God who reveals Himself. Right? God is a God that communicates through His Word and through His Son. God is a God who makes Himself known through His creative power. He intentionally shortens this process. And I'm not saying that there's no advantage to a study of comparative religions or how to understand. But look, God literally does not expect us to spend our entire life exhaustively studying every possible religion. He just says, here I am, obey me. You can know me. He introduces Himself. And because that's the way God functions and communicates with mankind, the decision isn't something that stretches across 60 years. The decision is something Joshua says, you can do this today. You've already got plenty of evidence. God has already declared and revealed Himself. So for me and my house, I know what we're going to do. We're going to serve the Lord. He's a very decisive leader. And that decision doesn't just come because he has all the answers and he knows exactly what's coming next, and whatever is coming next is super attractive and comfortable. It's not always going to be attractive and it's not always going to be comfortable. But because it's next with the Lord, he'll follow him. He has watched Moses do this time and time again. And although this is a different setting and a different context, he can remember the faith of Moses and he knows that's the way he wants to lead his family. And he'll do this with courage, publicly declaring where he stands and knowing that he has the responsibility to lead the rest of his household. So that's powerful, right? That's why this makes such a good theme verse. A decisive leader full of faith and courage. But can I get a volunteer, please? to read verse 16 down to verse 19. 16 through 19, please, of chapter 24. Thanks, Evan.
Then the people answered, "Far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For it is the Lord our God who brought us and our fathers up from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, and who did those great signs in our sight and preserved us in all the way that we went, and among all the peoples through whom we passed. And the Lord drove out before us all the peoples, the Amorites, who lived in the land. Therefore, we also will serve the Lord, for he is our God." But Joshua said to the people, "You're not able to serve the Lord. He is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions or your sins."
Very good. Joshua comes back and says, "Okay, I've set this out very decisively. I've asked you to make this decision today. But you need to count the cost. Because you say you're going to serve the Lord. You say that you're ready to sign up for this. But I don't really think you're able." Why is he saying that about these people? Think of what you know about Joshua, his time with them. Why is he saying to them, "You will not be able"? Very good. He's seen their weakness through the wilderness. He's seen their disobedience as they have conquered the land and divided it up. He's seen things that make him doubt. He knows the way their parents treated Moses and treated the Lord. And he kind of looks at it. So it's almost like, right? It's almost like the older preacher that looks at that next generation and goes, "I don't know that you guys..." He's looking at him a little suspiciously going, "I don't know if you really have what it takes to do this. Are you sure? Because I don't think you're able." Why else would he say this? That they're not going to be able to serve the Lord.
It's like a challenge.
What is it?
It's like, I saw it like a challenge. It's, you really, really kind of want to do something for people wrong for some reason. It's just like a human.
Yeah. So he's kind of raising the bar and double-checking their commitment level and giving them a healthy, almost competitive sense. Like, no, we will do this, right? Okay, so it can be a healthy challenge. That's a good way to read this. Why else would he bring out, "You're not going to be able"? What was specifically in the verse? Not that the other answers aren't what I'm looking for, but there are a few things specifically in the verse. Verse 19.
He's holy and jealous.
The holiness of God. He is a holy God. And he is not pleased with these Canaanites. That's why he's driven them out. He was not pleased with the Egyptians. That's why he showed his might over all of their false gods. This is a holy God. And serving him is going to be different than just running after Balaam. Serving him is going to be different than all of these other quote-unquote gods that they are familiar with. This is a holy God. This is a powerful God. And his expectations are that this will be not a perfect people, but a faithful people. A people that really do trust him. A people that really are seeking to please him. And so Joshua, as a godly leader, actually encourages them and challenges them. You need to count the cost. And we've got to do that within our own families. Hey, are you really ready for what high school is going to throw at you? Are you really ready for what college is going to throw at you? Are you really ready for what parenthood is going to throw at you? Are you going to follow God's commands? Are you going to accept God's instructions or God's rules? All of these different things. Please count the cost. Not that I'm trying to dissuade you from doing the right thing, but you need to know what you're getting into. And so I think it's really great that he is thinking about that for himself, and he's thinking about that for the rest of the people. Now, what's interesting to me is how public chapter 24 is. I mean, here we are all together, and you would almost think that "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord" would make a good, like, Tuesday night Devo around your dinner table. Why are we all doing this together? If we're talking about households that serve the Lord, that feels very nuclear family. That feels almost private. I'm asking the question this way. If in chapter 24, verse 1, he's called this assembly with all of the tribes, it seems that there must be some advantage to addressing this subject, not just around the dinner table, but collectively. And y'all have chosen this theme, like, you know, they texted me and said, "This lesson subject's great, can do." All right, so you chose to make this a collective study this week. What do we get out of discussing this together that's different than just you and your spouse, or your grandparents and grandkids, or whatever your family makeup is around the dinner table? What happens when we do it collectively? Okay, I heard the first word. Accountability and what?
If the person's not holding up their end of the bargain.
Okay, we find out if they're not holding up their end of the bargain. We see that mutual commitment that's been made. What else is the advantage of studying this collectively, of Joshua addressing the tribes collectively?
There's a healthy peer pressure, which is something we normally don't talk about, but peer pressure can be a positive thing. I think this is one of those.
Excellent. It is a healthy peer pressure. Yeah, that's not a term we use a ton, but I will say one of my friends texted a group of four guys about 2 weeks ago, and he said, "I am thankful for your positive peer pressure for the kind of husband and father I'm trying to be." David?
Yeah, I mean, when our country was founded, they wrote a document called the Declaration of Independence, and it was a statement that would become a national identity. We the people hold these truths to be self-evident. And it was signed by representatives from all 13 colonies. This was kind of a declaration that became an identity for the nation of Israel.
Excellent. So we're in Judges, everyone's doing what's right in their own eyes. What Joshua is saying, no, let's collectively submit to the Lord. Let's not just my family do this or your family, but let's all of our families do this, and let's draw our identity not from our culture, but let's draw our identity as a peculiar people that belong to the Lord. Other advantages that you see of having this discussed collectively, both in Joshua's day or in our day. Yes, thanks.
I think there's something in strength in numbers, right? I feel the most encouraged, the most bold when I'm here with everything.
Great. So I'm not alone. There's that strength in numbers. It's like, okay, I know other families are trying to get this right. I know other families are making the same decisions. We've been trying to explain to our kids that it's not like we can go ask our grandparents what their rules were for screen time. You know, or what their rules were for social media. And yes, we are putting rules on you that are different than your friends from school. And we're more restrictive with your devices than your friends from school. But like, hey, we're the first generation figuring this out. But we have all these other Christian families that are trying to set up those same kind of healthy boundaries for their kids as well. And boy, it just helps to not be in that alone. So that sense of teamwork, that sense of family is really helpful. Anything else before we go on? Yes?
I think about with Achan's sin, you've got one man or family out of the multitude, and his sin caused a lot of problems for a lot of people. And so when you think about the body of Christ as the church, it's important for my family to do what's right so that I don't bring down the rest of the church.
Phenomenal. Put that up in two slides, but it does belong here as well, right? That it needs to be addressed collectively, because although we are each, you know, individual families, what happens in my family can very easily be hurtful to many other families around me. And so that we need this call and this responsibility here. So, okay, where are we? We set up chapter 1, a man of faith, a man of courage, a man of obedience. We looked at Joshua at his best. We looked at Joshua at his worst. We've talked about what kind of declaration he's making here and why we would study this collectively in the first place. So let's pull out the old like preacher adage here. If Joshua were here today, what would he tell us? Right? And I do want to kind of wrap this all together with three big ideas that I think Joshua would say. Okay, you're standing there in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. You need to see this so that you and your house can serve the Lord full of faith, full of courage, and full of obedience. The first one is in Numbers chapter 13. I think Joshua would just tell us, yes, there are giants in the land, but don't worry, God overcomes the giants. Let's come back and read this together. Numbers chapter 13, we'll pick up a couple of different verses here, beginning in verse 30. So Caleb quieted the people before Moses, and he said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it." Coming down to verse 33, this is the report of the spies. "There also we saw the Nephilim. The sons of Anak are part of the Nephilim. And we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." Skipping ahead to chapter 14 and verse 7. Verse 6, "Joshua the son of Nun, Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes." Verse 7, "They spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, 'The land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. And if the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord. Do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them.' But all the congregation said to stone them with stones, and the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel." We don't have the exact same kind of giants they do. But we have some pretty big forces that it feels like have set their purposes and ambitions against the Lord. And we can look at that as social forces. We can look at that as corporate ideologies. We can look at that as educational things. We can just look at it as our own faults and weaknesses that sometimes feel like giants. But I think Joshua would be telling us, don't let that stop you from making the right choice. I think Joshua would be telling us, God is the one who overcomes the giants. Would somebody please read Matthew chapter 10 and verse 32? Matthew chapter 10 and verse 32. Thanks. Very good. So this is like the proof text for confession and why we need to confess Jesus. And certainly it has an application to confessing our faith before baptism. But contextually, I think we already all agree, it's bigger than just confessing before our baptism. In Matthew 10:32, confess Jesus. What is he talking about? What does it look like to be confessing Jesus on a daily basis? What does that involve? Very good. I love that. To acknowledge, to attribute, right? To give him the credit. We've already pointed out, I don't remember, sorry, whose hand it was, that said that Joshua didn't take all the credit on himself as the leader. Look how I led you to victory. Joshua said, no, the Lord gave us victory. It's the Lord's plans that we're following. He kept confessing, acknowledging, attributing things to the Lord. What else would we say here about Matthew chapter 10 that it means to confess? Yes, sir, Robert. Excellent. So people are not going to respond to this positively. I'm going to put it this way. We confess the name of Jesus openly and often. To say that we are looking to Jesus for how we're handling our family. That we're looking to Jesus about what marriage really is. We're looking to Jesus for what we put in our bodies. We're looking to Jesus for how we manage our schedule. We're looking to Jesus for what we're doing with our finances. That we would speak of the Lord openly and often. Yes, David. Excellent. Excellent. To know, like, this is what's driving me. This is what I'm doing. This is the master that I am trying to honor. He is Lord. Yes, sir.
Also, Ephesians 5:8 ties into this. You are light in the, now you are the light of the Lord. Walk as children in the light.
Excellent.
It's a walk. It's a continual endeavor.
Great. Great, that we are children of light. That was our annual theme a few years ago, and we just doubled down on that chapter. It was so encouraging. So this is a big part. Now, he just gave me the 5-minute warning, so I got to keep moving. But he would tell us, we're going to overcome these giants. Don't let them intimidate us. Don't let us back down and refuse to confess openly Christ as the one that motivates our choices. What does 1 Peter say? Who is there to harm you? If you prove zealous for what is good, there's that courage. Be strong and courageous to confess the name of Jesus in our homes and in our daily lives. All right, second big thing that Joshua would tell us, please keep compromises out of your tent. And this is coming back, of course, to Achan. And when we look at this passage, we can come over here to Joshua chapter 7 and verse 20. We remember the hurt and the heartache that came as Achan compromised and brought these things into his tent. Achan answered Joshua and said, "Truly I have sinned against the Lord, the God of Israel. This is what I did. When I saw among the spoil a beautiful mantle from Shinar and 200 shekels of silver and a bar of gold, 50 shekels in weight, I coveted them and took them. And behold, they are concealed in the earth inside my tent with the silver underneath it." We need to remember, everything in our tent is clearly seen by the Lord. Everything in your heart, everything in your life, everything that the elders have no idea about, God does. It is clearly seen. And when we bring the world into our tent, it is not going to remain hidden. It's going to be corrosive. And it's going to be destructive. What we see here with Achan is not only can it not be hidden, but that whatever you think it is, it's not worth it. Satan is going to do his best to make it as alluring and as attractive as possible. But Joshua would shout to us, "Listen, your family was on track. You're doing the right thing. You and your house are serving the Lord. And Satan's trying to get your attention over here. Don't fall for it. It's not worth it. No promotion, no relationship, no physical item, no popularity. None of it is worth it. Don't bring spiritual compromises into our tent. Instead, let us be people of contentment." Contentment is not one of those subjects that we cover maybe often enough. Some of my friends have sent their kids to a very nice private school. As they were able to talk with other parents, they said, "Okay, like, our kids, they're getting ready to go into this new school. What do we need to know about?" And the first thing they said was materialism. They said they'll hear language in the hallways like they do everywhere else, but it's going to be materialism. And don't let your kids get wrapped up in that. Don't let them lose their contentment. Keep compromises out of the tent. All right, and the third thing I think he would say is, we've got new territory to navigate, but you can remember old heroes. All of Joshua's training was outside of the promised land. You know, he's following under Moses and watching what Moses does with these stubborn and rebellious people day after day and year after year, but he never watches Moses fight battles like he's going to fight. and cities that he has to go through. I mean, they conquer some kings, and that's wonderful, but it's not the same as this new territory that Joshua is in. And I just want to tell you, I don't know your personal life, and I don't know what new territory you've got to face in the coming weeks and months, but I know this. Joshua was well served when he remembered the faith of Moses. And the example of Moses' faith would help him in that new territory. He could look back at that kind of devoted and obedient leadership to continue to be just as devoted to God. And what we see from the end of the book is that as long as the people, this generation was alive, that would look back at Joshua's leadership, even though they were in new territory and they were getting settled and they were raising families and becoming agricultural instead of kind of military driven, they could remember Joshua's faithfulness. And there are so many biblical and living examples of faith and devotion within the family. Hebrews 13, of course, tells us to look at the outcome of those that lead us. Look at the results of their faith so that we would remember. In Joshua chapter 4 and verse 23 and 24, after they had come through the Jordan River and they set up these stones of memorial, it's to help them remember this event where God's power to give them victory had been on display. And it was going to help them with every other battle they fought. And in John chapter 3, Jesus says, I'm going to be lifted up. I'm going to draw the whole world to myself. And we look back at what he accomplished on the cross and in that empty tomb to remember that God's going to be with us in every other battle we fight so that we could say, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Thank you for making this such a great class.